while executives have a lot of collaborative meetings that are somewhat strategic and they'll label them as such, where real like creativity and innovation is happening is at the mid-management level. And those folks are the ones who are driving, like solving sort of the big problems. They're having more of the spontaneous moments in time where they're collaborating on kind of on the fly. And the executives get to the point where they're so scheduled in a day that it's virtually impossible to have a spontaneous interaction.
In this episode, we are continuing the conversation with Sam Julka, the CEO of Doris Research. Sam started her career in Indianapolis as an interior designer, went back to school in 2010 to get her master's in fine art in design thinking and design research from Indiana University's Heron School of Art and Design. In 2012, Sam founded Doris Research and since then has worked with hundreds of organizations in many industries across the country. She has been so successful that in 2019, Doris even began franchising their business model across the country. She is a noted leader here in Indianapolis and across the country. In this episode, we're going to continue the conversation from the first episode that you listened into and dig into what Sam learned as a CEO, how she walked her team through that murky muckiness that was the summer of 2020 when so many businesses were trying to figure out, what do we do now? What do we do next? What's the next best step? So listen in for Sam's lessons on how they took the next best step to figure out how to not only keep the doors open, but to serve their clients in a much more impactful way based on what the world was asking of them now. All right, let's dig in, my friend. Let's pick up with July 2020, and you had just gotten all this data back. You had the opportunity to interact with all these CEOs and company executives, hearing what they're hearing, experiencing what they're experiencing by way of space constraints and what people might need as the doors reopen. When that happens, and already currently, I mean, we're seeing workplaces transition back. So it wasn't a I mean, people have wanted to come back together. Businesses have needed people to come back together for their own viability. So walk us through, you have this data, you've been presenting it. Where do you go from there?
Yeah. So we used it to open doors into, you know, conversations about new types of work that we could do for people. So, you know, this is, we are entering an, you know, a moment in time when really nobody has any idea what office space should look like moving into the future. I mean, nobody has those answers. There's no white papers on this. Whatever pandemic we had last, offices, you know, did not exist like they do now. So,
you mean in 1918 there weren't case studies?
I don't know that there were cubicles then. I don't think Herman Miller had gotten to that point.
Right. Where to put the typewriters? Is that
might have been what people were focusing on. Were there typewriters then? Probably.
I digress. I'm sorry.
I don't know. But I mean, certainly they probably had similar type problems. How do we get people back to work? But gosh, work looks so different now. Nowadays. So we were kind of armed with this information that people wanted. They like wanted to see it. And our researchers did an amazing job of taking all of these unique individual organization, you know, surveys that we had ran. And then they started writing these aggregate reports. So here's what it looks like across all the data. So, and we started to find interesting things that when you looked at the data in an aggregate versus you pulled it out and looked at it individually, they were different. For example, in some organ, so we would ask, one of the questions we were asking was, how ready are you to come back to work? And so individuals were ranking from 0 to 10, how ready they were, 10 being totally ready, let's do this, you know, 0, not a chance, I'm not coming. So the national, when we looked at it, what we were curious about, I suppose, as researchers, was breaking it down by the age demographic. So we wanted to see if there was variation in age groups based on readiness to return to the office. Mm-hmm. And
very smart.
We had a high, we were like, everything we're hearing in the news right now is that this is attacking, you know, people maybe 60 years plus or 65 years plus. And so we were like, surely when we look at this data, it's going to show that the folks that are least ready to return are going to be those that are the most vulnerable, the 60 plus year olds.
Yes. Baby boomers.
Right. So we're like, the graph is going to have to show that, right? That's what we're hearing. That's what is logical, right? Isn't that what we'll see? And when we looked at the data across the aggregate, everyone held at about a 6 in terms of, didn't matter really what age group you were in. Everyone, there was no statistical difference in age from when we put the aggregate together. And this is where, when our statistician gets so excited, and we're such nerds and we love looking at stuff like this, but what was exciting.
We need your gifts in the world. I dropped out of stats twice in college because I didn't understand the first 3 weeks. So God love you. I love
you.
You
need to meet our statistician. She's brilliant. So,
I bet.
So we're looking at this data in aggregate, and then we're looking at it against the same graph, but in a unique organization. So we would look at organization A, and there it might be, the graph might look kind of like a U or a V shape, where if the youngest and the oldest are, you know, most ready to come back to the office, but the middle age groups are not ready. Or it might look like an inverted V, where the youngest and oldest are least ready to come back to the office. Or we saw trending up, trending down lines. Like, it just was different at every organization we looked at. And so why that was interesting to us and why it mattered to us was, when we started to see things like that, it indicated to us that this pandemic is affecting each organization differently, mostly from a culture standpoint. So when we talk about culture at Doris, we talk about, the way we define it is talking about people's or groups of people's values, behaviors, and beliefs. And if you think about what we were facing, it is, you know, we were facing how values, behaviors, and, you know, how values and beliefs were going to drive behaviors, essentially.
Yes.
And they were driving them very different at different organizations. And so we knew that because of that, we were relevant in working through the needs of unique organizations, again, just like we had done before. Mm-hmm. So we needed to now go and say, all right, here's the problem we're solving for you. You're trying to figure out what to do, whether it be stay at home and keep doing this, or come back into the office, or some combination of both, but you need to understand how the, you know, culture of your particular organization is going to be affected by this, and what challenges you all are going to face that are not going to be the same as the company that's right next door to you. Mm-hmm. They're going to be different. And so through that, we were able to take, so historically, Doris has had 3 service areas. We're a service-based organization. We do research. And then we do a couple other things that sort of help folks along through the process of making change. So we knew that we could take bits of our research service area and marry it with bits of our service area that helped people through change in their office. And we could create a fourth service that was something that we would have never thought of before, or never thought of needing before, but we called the service revitalization. And we called it that because what people were going to go through was, eventually they were going to come back to something that they'd already been at before, but everything had changed. So you now needed to figure out how to operate and behave in the environment that you used to come to, but now the rules are different.
Yes.
And what does that look like? And so we set out to be the people to help define what that's going to look like, and how we know what to set the rules, either as, or how to make people feel comfortable, or how to know when people are ready, or how to know what people's values are as it relates to coming back in. So we felt we had all the right skills for that. And that's what we ultimately started doing, was working on this service that we called revitalization. And we think there's a lot of room for it, even in the future, of just continuing to think about improving upon what you already have versus maybe a blank slate and starting over again, which is maybe what we, you know, we'd always done with research. And so, you know, in about this time, people had started to, I mean, certainly by July, I would say in May, even people were starting to take our phone calls again. Like they had settled down, they had gotten their people, like, you know, in March and April, it was a crisis of getting people laptops and webcams and software they needed. And how are they going to manage from remote and what, you know, like all of that was starting to get figured out.
Yes.
And so they were now ready to address some of the wicked problems they were facing that were, that weren't, they had to stop the bleeding too, kind of like we talked about, like they mm-hmm. were going through the same thing, right? But then they started to become curious. So people started taking our calls again. And then people wanted to know what we had. Like, what are you learning? What are you learning from other groups? What could you learn? How could you help us learn something? And like, we just basically then launched off of that. Okay, we're relevant again. Like, we have stuff to share, stuff to do. And then what was interesting about that was, like I had said, traditionally Doris didn't do survey work. And we didn't really want to do, we didn't want to build our new, you know, whole new world on that. We still had, Doris has values that stem into everything we do. We want to be people-centered. We want it to be an experience that people appreciate. Mm-hmm. So at Doris, we always want people to, when we are collecting data from them, we want to, yes, collect the data, but also we want the experience through which we're collecting the data to be one that will be positive for them. Mm-hmm. And so long-term play wasn't surveys for us. That wasn't going to be it. So our research team, I mean, I'd had zero part in this, but they went to work on figuring out, okay, we used to do meetings with leadership teams in person and we would bring in, you know, 100 packs of post-it notes and we would have them, you know, writing thoughts and we would cover a wall and, you know, help them map out whatever it was we were going to research, but it was very analog and we were high touch and, you know, we had all these activities. We have tons of, like, you know, arts and craft supplies essentially to draw out data from people. We couldn't do that anymore. And so we had to figure out how are we going to create kind of a very similar experience, but not be with them. Like we couldn't be face to face with anyone anymore. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So they created very quickly using simple tools. So we heavily leverage the Google Suite. So Google Docs, Google Sheets, things like that.
Yes.
Because they are things that people recognize. So most folks have been inside an Excel spreadsheet before and they kind of know how to operate in there. We didn't want to have to go to some, you know, special app that people were going to use that they had to download and figure out. And so we created and innovated on these tools that existed, but they were very simple to use. Mm-hmm. And we probably will continue to use them moving forward. We get in a lot of our engagements, people will say, wow, I've never thought about using the tool that this particular tool this way, but it was so helpful. And it helped our group, you know, collaborate and we weren't even in the same room, you know, or whatever it was. So the innovation that came out of this is pretty amazing. So lucky to work with the smart people I work with.
Yeah.
Throughout this.
This season of the Hot Mess Hotline is brought to you by my Hot Mess Quiz. One of the common lessons that my clients learn during coaching is how to really evaluate a problem, dissect it for clarity, and then take action on the tasks that really move the needle. The Hot Mess Quiz can bring you that focus too. As a leader, your work life is full of, well, work. But according to Pareto, 80% of that work isn't even impactful. If you need to create growth and change, you need to focus in on what truly matters and what will drive new results. Take the Hot Mess Quiz by clicking on the link below, which is stephaniecrevins.com/hotmessquiz. You know, just like this podcast promised, and this is in the real world too, what happens when people stop being polite and start getting real? That's what you're going to get in this report. It's going to be tailored to your business hot mess to tell you exactly where to focus your efforts first, and then how to bring your team along to get the change that you need to create. Go to stephaniecrevins.com/hotmessquiz. Don't wait another minute to start becoming the pro troublemaker you've always wanted to be.
different.
That's my question for you. As we think about what's next, as we move forward from September 2020, just continuing to look back for a hot second and think about what you want to take with you moving forward. But what have you learned about the people that you lead?
They're super resilient. They care about their, they just kind of really want to do their work. We almost like come to this playground every day and get to play together, and kind of being able to set that up so that they can continue to do that. I can't even imagine the things they'll continue to come up with. It will be incredible. They're so smart. They're, you know, quick to kind of pivot where needed. It was hard, I would say, coming out of the furlough for the company. I mean, it was a tough, you know, few weeks coming back and kind of figuring out who we were again. But they're mm-hmm. we all did it. And we kind of operate real successfully today as a group. It's just, I guess the word resilient. Everyone has been very resilient out of this. And I don't know, I would argue that none of us knew we had that in us going into it.
Yeah. What have you learned about yourself as a leader throughout this process? So far, we're not even
done yet. We are not done yet. That is so true. I mean, talk to me in 2 weeks. Gosh, that like, I guess, you know, I have the ability to make hard decisions when needed. I have faced a significant amount of adversity at this point, and we're still alive. What have I learned as a leader? Leadership's hard. I think I've said that a lot. This is really hard. My job is harder now than it's ever been. From a leadership standpoint, you know, trying to lead the way is hard when you don't know what the way is. I don't know. But what else are you going to do? Like, you might as well keep going.
Yeah.
maybe that's what I learned. Like, I'm searching for the words. We'll probably fail. We embrace failure here, quite honestly, very often. We're probably going to fail, but we'll figure out a way to succeed.
Mm-hmm. What keeps you going, even when you don't know what to do, even when you know failure is inevitable? What keeps you going?
What keeps me going? I asked somebody this today unfairly. What keeps me going? I think it's interesting. Like the work I think the work we do and the thing we're building. And I get to look at a lot of companies. I get to go inside a lot of companies and look at them. And some of our clients are amazing. And I'm like, yeah, I would come work here in a second. Like, this is amazing. And then it's never our clients. Probably it's, you know, places I'm just in. But, you know, I think, wow, I don't think I could do it. I couldn't come here to work every day. I would, you know, I wouldn't be able to live that way. And so probably what keeps me going is we get to do this every day here, and it's fun, and it's, you know, we're our people and we're together. And what would be the alternative? Like, I don't want to give that up. Mm-hmm. So I'll probably just keep working until I can. I would probably honestly just keep working at this. The work we do is so engaging and interesting to me, and the building of the work, you know, the watching the work evolve and grow. Mm-hmm. So exciting. I couldn't work somewhere probably where there's a lot of red tape or you have to ask 25 people before you can change a comma in a sentence. Like, I don't work that way. If someone wants to, you know, if we want to try something new, we try it. Yeah. And if that didn't work, then we try something else. And I just can't imagine not working somewhere that's not something that's valued.
I find that is the biggest misconception about especially top leadership, and most CEOs, entrepreneurs are so internally driven that it's hard for people to relate to them. People don't understand our need to just keep going, to figure it out, to be curious just for the sake of being curious, because we know something's going to come of it. And that's a big disconnect that happens, I think, between lower level employees and top level employees and those who race to the top too in companies. It's just, we've got to keep going. Like, you cannot hold us back, and you can't put too many parameters on us. You can't put too many rules in place, because that's like holding back our soul, you know,
on the
side. And so with that, what do you wish that mid-level leaders at your company or otherwise understood about being in your shoes?
Mid-level leaders. So I guess there's a lot on your mind if you are, you know, and I don't pretend to think that I lead an organization that's enormous. You know, we're probably in the grand scheme of things, pretty small potatoes. But any organization that you're leading, you kind of have to hold a bunch of different things top of mind at one time. Mm. And you have to be, there is a ton of breadth and not a ton of depth in a lot of different areas. And, you know, maybe mid-level managers sometimes have the ability or have the, maybe it's the luxury of going deep in one area and really investigating that and, mm-hmm. and spending a lot of time there. It's interesting. We're running a study right now on, we're studying collaboration, which is fascinating, and how its efficacy exists between face-to-face and remote collaboration. And through that, we've engaged people in various levels of organizations. And what an early stage finding I just heard this morning was that while executives have a lot of collaborative meetings that are somewhat strategic and they'll label them as such, where real like creativity and innovation is happening is at the mid-management level. Mm-hmm. And those folks are the ones who are driving, like solving sort of the big problems. And they're between those groups and the individual contributors, they're having more of the spontaneous moments in time where they're collaborating on kind of on the fly. And the executives get to the point where they're so scheduled in a day that it's virtually impossible to have a spontaneous interaction with them.
Yeah.
And so, and there's sometimes a gatekeeper to get to them. So I guess advice, is that the question? Advice to mid-level managers?
Yeah. Mid-level leaders. Yeah. What do you wish that they knew about being in your shoes?
Bask in the glory of knowing that you are probably operating in the most innovative and creative area of your organization, and that it's okay to live there. Like that's maybe a good place to be, you know, being in the shoes of the executive it's not always, there are a lot of little, it's big picture and then down to little detail. Like I'm looking in my office and there's a light bulb out and that's driving me nuts. And I'm sure I'm the only person that's driving nuts. You know, it's like holding all of those things at the same time constant. And I don't know that everyone wants that burden. Maybe. Mm-hmm. Maybe you just want to come to work and really innovate and be creative and focus on that.
Yes.
And that's great. And do that.
Yeah. Yeah. At that mid-level, you're afforded the opportunity. I mean, your job is to drive focus, and there's not enough that happens at that level. But at the CEO level, I mean, if you're flying the plane, you drop the plane from 40,000 feet to the runway and then straight back up and then have to fly over the entire town and take it all in and figure out how to get to the next town. I mean, there's that breath that our brain has to kind of manage all the time that is not always as great as it seems, maybe. And combine it with being so internally driven that we've always got to keep the plane going at 500 yep. miles an hour. It can be exhausting being the CEO.
Yeah, it's exhausting. I mean, life right now is exhausting for all kinds of people for all kinds of reasons. But of course. I mean, it is. There's a lot to think about. I do get to steal the glory sometimes, you know, when we have big wins or something like that, but it's kind of a humbling job. I think if you're good at it, you should be kind of back to that bit about surrounding yourself with smart people.
Mm.
I think if you're good at your job as an executive or a leader within an organization, you should be really good at finding the people that are actually the true experts at things far beyond what you are, mm-hmm. and putting them into the positioned to just really excel at that.
Yes.
And kind of keep your own needs at bay. That's your needs as a executive, president, whatever it might be, are and should probably be of no concern to the company or the organization.
Mm.
Should not matter to anybody how late you stayed up to write email. It should not matter that you are working well and unpaid on furlough. Like they don't, that is not something that they should be burdened with the worry of.
Right.
And they should just continue to be able to do their work with the path cleared.
Mm. So as CEO, your job is to clear the path.
I think of it that way a lot. I think I would hope, and I think leaders grow and change. I mean, I think everyone is always evolving. I think there's various levels of leadership. We see them all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate and respect leaders that serve. I think there's probably maybe a one level up beyond, in my mind, beyond a servant leader is probably almost unrealistic, but the person who can do all of the servant leadership type things and be able to maybe execute in an area of, you know, a specialty area. But I think I respect and appreciate leaders that serve their people versus, you know, what to me the lowest common denominator of a leader is a dictator or somebody that refuses to listen, tells people what to do,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it may or may not be the best thing for the people they're leading.
Yes.
That doesn't work in my world.
I can see that. So based on what you know now, September 23rd, 2020, what's next for Doris?
I think we've positioned ourselves to have a really nice little 2021 come in here. More and more organizations are we're going to go back to offices. That is going to happen. I don't believe that they're gone forever. I actually know, and I know through data we're collecting that they're not. A lot of people are going to offices already. But I do think that things are changing, and I am watching other leaders that I engage. I love to kind of pretend like I'm a bumblebee and just pollinate across talking to other leaders at organizations and listen to what they're doing and what they're thinking about. And they're different. I mean, people are thinking wildly different thoughts about what this return looks like. And I think because of that, because they're different, because not everyone is going to read a white paper that's produced by some large organization and then just know exactly what to do with their people.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that, I think there is going to be a lot of work for us in helping leaders sort out what's the next move for us. What do we need to do to be effective moving forward? We know we have a lot of real estate. Do we need it? How are we going to use it? Yeah, we need it. No, we don't. We need it different. We need to look different. What does it look like? Yes, it's the same, but we're going to behave different. I think there's a lot of answers that need answering. There are a lot of questions that need answering. And I think we're poised as the people to go out and find the answers for them.
That sounds amazing. Very helpful.
We're interested. We can't
yes.
wait.
Yes. Yeah, I love your curiosity. So last question, and we'll wrap it up here. But what's next for you as a leader, given the hot mess that 2020 has brought you, mm-hmm. everything that you've learned, and you now have the opportunity to step up your game in a way you didn't realize before was coming, but is now here.
Yeah, I think it will be. So we talked about the lesson that I learned fortuitously through surrounding myself with people that would be able to help me in a time of need.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd kind of worked, you know, I'd worked towards some of that myself. I think as a leader moving forward, what will be important, and we've already started to do some of this at Doris, is enable the people that I work with to have those networks. So the people that are other, you know, also seen as leaders at Doris, we need to be developing them so that they have who are their go-tos, who are they surrounding themselves with that are the people that are going to help them out of a sticky situation. And I think that is what will serve us in the next iteration of this. you know, and it's not just maybe somebody at Doris who is perceived in a leadership role, but we've talked with a lot of our folks here on, you need to now go out and start expanding your network, go out and learn from people that do similar, you know, work as you, but are, you know, in, at a different level in their organization. And I think we as a group need to embrace the notion of surrounding ourselves with smart people. The more we can do that, probably the stronger we'll be ultimately.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, I so appreciate our conversation today. I just love hearing your insight and your experience. It's, you know, for so many of us, so many leaders, that mid-March to the end of May was a really scary time, but also a very powerful time to figure out what was next for our companies. How do we pivot? How do we get curious? How do we answer the powerful questions that we need to ask now to emerge from this even stronger? I felt very passionately, and I just believe strongly that my role in this world, I realized it in April, was to bring that resiliency and that focus and that strength to people that they didn't know that they yet had, because 2020 has not been my year personally or business-wise. 2018, lots of really crappy things happened that helped me build resiliency and focus. And so I wanted to be that for people during this time, because I had been given the gift of 2020 in another year, unfortunately.
Yes.
And so I wanted to be that source of strength for people, and to hear you come of that and ask these powerful questions in your own way and help Doris emerge stronger and other companies emerge stronger. And ultimately, when you think about helping these companies come back in a safe way, in a healthy way, I mean, that's just noble work as our world comes back together in some kind of new way. So thank you for doing the work that you do.
Thank you. This was fun. And awesome. Yeah, big fan. So thanks. Yep. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. All right. Let's wrap this up, friends. It's time to get off the internet, stop listening to this podcast, and go get the real work done so you can be a pro troublemaker in this world, my friends. Fix those hot messes in your life. I'll see you soon.